Welcome to the CN Finance earnings release of the third quarter earnings conference call. Your speakers for today's call are Mike Maurer, Chris Jansen, and Rocco DelGoscio. Operator assistance is available anytime during this conference by pressing *0. A question and answer session will follow the presentation. I'll now turn the call over to your speakers. Please begin.
Thank you, operator, and thank you all for dialing in today. Joining me are Chris Jansen, my co-chief investment officer, and Rocco DelGoscio, our CFO. Before we begin, Rocco will give you our customary disclaimer regarding information and forward-looking statements. Rocco?
Thanks, Mike. I would like to remind everyone that today's call is being recorded and that this call is the property of CN Finance, Inc. Any unauthorized broadcast of this call in any form is strictly prohibited. Audio replay of the call will be available by visiting our investor relations page on our website at www.cnfn-inc.com. I would also like to call your attention to the safe harbor disclosure in our press release regarding forward-looking information and remind everyone that today's call may include forward-looking statements and projections. We ask that you refer to the most recent 10-Q filing for important factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from these projections. We will not update forward-looking statements unless required by law. To obtain copies of our latest SEC filings, please visit our investor relations page on our website. At this time, I'd like to turn the call back over to our chairman and CEO, Michael Maurer.
Thank you, Rocco. Last night, we reported strong results for our fiscal third quarter ended March 31. We had net deployments of $7 million, improved our average yield by 87 basis points, of which 53 basis points is due from an increase in LIBOR, and continued to maintain a majority of our investments in first lien loans. Our net investment income was 27 cents per share, more than fully covering our dividend. Market conditions continue to be challenging, both within the broader syndicated leverage finance markets and in competitive situations within our core middle market focus. Covenant-light transactions, weaker lender protections, and increasingly aggressive economic terms are a common theme as arrangers and lenders compete for deals. As always, we are conservative underwriters who focus on secured lending for quality companies and management teams. In a frothy market, that means being disciplined and passing on the vast majority of opportunities that we see. Since our last conference call in February, our originations have been a mix of directly sourced loans and syndicated transactions to borrowers we know well and have historical comfort with. We made a unitranche investment and joined a club deal. Our new investments in the quarter were all first lien, including a last out first lien unitranche, and our one new investment after quarter end was also first lien. Our pipeline contains a mix of directly sourced opportunities, club transactions, and secondary opportunities. When we analyze secondary opportunities, our investment team focuses on loan structure, including covenants, repayment provisions, and documentation. Generally speaking, we look for shorter weighted average lives assets where we're comfortable holding the position to maturity. Direct lending opportunities tend to have significant structural protection for our capital and often carry higher yields than larger deals in the syndicated markets. I'd now like to turn the call over to Chris to discuss our portfolio activity.
Thanks, Mike. We made four investments during the quarter, one of which was to a new portfolio company and three which were to existing portfolio companies. We also had three realizations during the quarter. We invested in a last out first lien loan as part of a unitranche loan to GEE Group, a staffing company focused on IT services and finance and accounting positions. We have followed the company for over a year and had the opportunity to invest in a seasoned issuer with a world-class management team. Our yield at cost was approximately 17%. We also added $5.4 million to our position in the term loan of U.S. Wealth Services. The company has been performing well, and we are very comfortable with the structure and the terms of the loan. Our yield to cost on this new purchase is approximately 11.4%. Subsequent to quarter end, we sold all of our Class A shares of U.S. Well Services, which represented the majority of our equity for approximately $4.5 million. This position was marked at approximately $4.2 million at March 31st. We still hold the Class B shares, which are marked at approximately $313,000. I'd also note that we had a partial repayment from Liberty Oilfield Services of $3.5 million, further reducing our oil and gas-related exposure. Our first realization in the quarter was also a new investment in an existing portfolio company. We participated in the refinancing of the first lien loan of AP Gaming. The company successfully completed an IPO in the quarter, although Apollo remains the largest shareholder. Our realized IRR on this term loan was approximately 7.5%. Our realized IRR on all of our investments in AP Gaming from our initial investment in 2013 through our realization in the quarter was 10.2%. The yield on the new loan to AP Gaming at cost is approximately 6.3%. Our second realization was, like AP Gaming, also a new investment. Fleet Pride refinanced its credit facilities, extending their maturity by 3 years. Our fully realized IRR on the old loan was approximately 13.5%. Our yield to cost on the new loan is approximately 7.8%. Our third realization was Medical Solutions. This was a small position for us at just $4 million. Our fully realized IRR was approximately 6.6%. After quarter end, we made one new investment and had two significant realizations. Our new investment was an outstanding loan in a club deal in the first lien loan to Hostway Corporation. Hostway provides cloud, managed, and dedicated server hosting services to developers, startups, small and medium-sized businesses, and large enterprises. Our yield to cost is approximately 9.9%. As I previously mentioned, we sold our A shares of U.S. Well Services. We exited this position above our mark and made the decision to sell in the context of managing our total exposure to both the borrower and the oil and gas space. The restructuring took place in the first quarter of 2017. We continue to hold the position in the term loan and the B shares, as mentioned earlier. Our IRR on this equity position was approximately 71.6%, inclusive of the loss we booked during the restructuring in 2017. Finally, we had a partial realization of our position in PR Wireless. We continue to hold a small position in the delayed draw term loan and in warrants, but have sold our entire funded term loan position, which was approximately 14.4%. Our realized IRR on the term loan was 8.7%. When we fully realize our open mobile position, including our remaining delayed draw term loan commitment and warrants, we expect the IRR to be higher. Our IRR to date on all PR Wireless or open mobile investments, same company, using March 31 marks for our remaining positions is 10.8%. Our portfolio company count was 24 as of March 31st and is 25 today thanks to our investment in Hostway. We've taken the step of changing our industry categorization to Global Industry Classification Standard, or GICS. We think this makes our portfolio composition easier to understand, as well as bringing us into alignment with the best practices of other managers. Using GICS, as of March 31st, our largest industry concentration was professional services at 12.7%, followed by energy, equipment, and services at 12%, hotels, restaurants and leisure at 11.3%, commercial services and supplies at 10.6%, and diversified telecommunication services at 8.5%. I'd now like to turn the call back to Rocco to discuss our financial results.
Thank you, Chris. For the quarter, our net investment income was $3.7 million, or 27 cents per share. As of March 31, the fair value of our portfolio was $297.2 million compared to $286.5 million at December 31. Our investment activity accounts for a $7.5 million increase in our portfolio. We also had $595,000 of unrealized appreciation from investments in the quarter. As of March 31, the weighted average yield of our debt portfolio, including amortization, was 11.12% versus 10.25% at December 31. The major driver of the increase in our average yield was the increase in LIBOR during the quarter. We also had a positive differential in yields between investments made and realized during the quarter. Our new investments had an average yield of 9.7% versus 8.9% average yield on our realized investments. Our debt portfolio was comprised of 97.4% floating and 2.6% fixed rate investments. Both 1 and 3 month LIBOR are in excess of the applicable floors on all our loans. Our average portfolio company investment was $12.4 million. Our largest portfolio company, PGI, was $25.3 million, and our second largest portfolio company, Kalis, was $23.4 million. As of March 31, 52.5% of our portfolio was in first lien investments, including a last out first lien unitranche investment. 42.4% of the portfolio was in second lien investments, 0.3% was in unsecured debt, and the remaining 4.8% was in equity and warrant positions. Additional information regarding the composition of our portfolio is included in our Form 10-Q, which was filed yesterday. We were 0.71 times levered as of March 31, compared to 0.69 times levered as of December 31. With respect to our liquidity, as of March 31, we had $6.9 million in cash, $2.4 million in restricted cash, and $26.6 million of capacity under our revolving credit facility with UBS. With that, I'd like to turn the call back over to Mike.
Thank you, Rocco. As Chris noted, we have been actively managing our exposure in the energy sector. During and after the March quarter, we shifted a portion of our exposure out of non-income-producing equity into first lien yielding assets. Liberty had a very successful IPO, and we were partially repaid with the IPO proceeds at a premium. Inclusive of paydowns, our sale of U.S. Wells A shares and changes to our marks, the fair value of our positions in oil and gas and energy equipment services was reduced by about $850,000 from December 31st to today. This includes realized and unrealized appreciation of approximately $1 million year to date. I note that we've improved the mix by adding first lien secured exposure as a replacement for equity risk, and the fair value of all our energy related positions were either stable or improved during the period. Our marks this quarter increased by an aggregate of $1.7 million, offset by $319,000 in accretion. We had four positions that moved by $500,000 or more. These were Bird, Kalis, Endemol, and Trident. Bird Electric continued to benefit from improving fundamentals as well as continued significant work associated with 2017's hurricanes. We increased the mark on our preferred equity position by approximately $500,000 this quarter. Kalis has had an excellent fundamental results and is benefiting from the rising price of oil. Oil prices have a double benefit, both increasing the value of the company's reserves and generating additional revenue. We increased the mark from 88 to 90 this quarter. Our mark on Endemol improved from 95 to 99 this quarter. Endemol's results continue to improve, and we have marked up the position over the last several quarters. Finally, our position in Trident Health was marked down in the quarter. Alongside other second lien lenders, we hold a position in the Tranche A second lien loan, Tranche B second lien loan, and a preferred position at the holding company. When comparing our position at December 31st to March 31st, the aggregate value of our marks on Trident Health decreased from 52 to 47. We have the loan on partial accrual given its mark and the fact that interest during the quarter was in the form of PIK. As of April 1st, the interest will be in the form of cash and PIK. We continue to work constructively with other stakeholders toward a longer-term solution for the company's debt structure. We fully earned our incentive fee in the March quarter, and we expect to earn our incentive fee in the current quarter as well. Our distribution for the quarter ended March 31, 2018, was 25 cents per share and was paid on April 5th. We believe our dividend level is consistent with our ability to generate NII without reducing our investment quality or changing our focus from secured lending opportunities. We are committed to paying a sustainable dividend to our shareholders. We earned in excess of our dividend in the March quarter, and we believe that our run rate portfolio yield and portfolio size position us to continue to cover our current dividend rate. Our leverage at 0.71 times as of March 31st is within our target range of plus or minus 0.75 times. We are comfortable at our current leverage level. That said, our board of directors approved decreasing our asset coverage ratio from 200% to 150% as provided under the Small Business Credit Availability Act. This will become effective in May of 2019. Our board also authorized a share buyback program. Over the next 12 months, we may repurchase up to $5 million of our common stock in the open market. Given the significant disconnect between our NAV and our trading levels, we and our board feel a buyback program is prudent. We are in the process of immediately implementing the buyback program. With that, operator, please open the lines for Q&A.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will conduct the question-and-answer session. If you would like to state a question, please press star 1 on your phone now, and you will be placed into the queue in the order received. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone now. Our first question comes from Allison Taylor-Ruddery from Oppenheimer. Please state your question.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, perfect.
Good. I might. I really appreciate all the color with the portfolio investments this quarter. And Mike, I might have missed something, so I just wanted to touch on it again. I noticed that there was a pretty substantial in uptick in PIK interest income this quarter, and I think that you had touched on it when you had spoken about the 1888 Industrial Services loan. Does that go by another name? Were you talking about that? Does that go by another name that I might have missed?
Well,
and if so, can we discuss maybe a little bit about that kind of that PIK toggle?
Yeah, two things. The 1888 did not change, so that would not have been the uptick in PIK during the quarter. But the previous name to that is AAR. It changed a little while back, but AAR, Oilfield Services, and 1888 are the same. The difference in the PIK was the change in Trident. December quarter was cash, and in the March quarter was 100% PIK, and starting April 1 is a mix of cash and PIK.
Okay. And you think that that'll go down. We'll see that number tick down again.
Yes, you will. Not all the way back, but partially back. And
okay.
I want to clarify two things before we go on. One is I'm going to just clarify one of my partners' comments about the 14.4% on PR Wireless. That was $14.4 million pay down. And the second thing is that today, you know, subsequent to his comment, the B shares that had a $313,000 value for U.S. Well equity that we said we continue to hold, we sold today at slightly mm-hmm. above the mark value. So just to assume it's just a tad above that. But that's just two clarifications I wanted to get out there for everyone.
Oh, great. That's great color. And then I guess my second question would be kind of regarding the AGS or American Gaming Systems. That looks like that restructured deal that, you know, kind of post-IPO might be a little bit lower of a yield than you might otherwise necessarily target. Do you see this loan as more of a transitional position, or are you guys comfortable holding it for a long period of time? Is this something that you might think of maybe exiting? I assume it's reasonably liquid if you have the opportunity to deploy into something that was higher yielding.
Yeah, exactly. You hit it on the nail on the head.
Okay, great. That's it for me. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Paul Johnson from KBW. Please state your question.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. I just wanted to kind of touch on the leverage, the asset coverage. I just was wondering if you guys can talk at all about, you know, if you have formed your thoughts around what sort of assets that you'd be looking to invest in or anything that you might be looking to do differently or perhaps the same in pursuing that additional leverage.
As you know, the board approved it, so it will not be effective until May of 2019. And
right.
So we've had extensive discussions at the board level and at the management level around this exact topic. Given that we are 12 months from implementing, there's going to be a lot more discussions around it. So there is not an exact plan to implement, because even if there was one, it would be different 12 months from now. But the general parameters that we are kind of looking at are, you know, using the increased leverage, number one, to increase return for shareholders. That's the most important thing. And coincidental with that at an equal level is to do that in a way that ideally reduces the risk. So by definition, that would lend us to a higher mix of the low risk, a little bit lower return, using more leverage. That doesn't mean we won't still do some of what we're doing now, but not in the same ratios. We need to continue to develop that. We've got models. We're looking at different ratios. It will also depend on the financing that's available out there. We've started discussions with our current lender, one of our former lenders. We're talking to other people. It's everything from, you know, unsecured debt to the UBS facility. We have discussions around, instead of a strict advance rate on an overall portfolio, looking at the underlying assets, highly liquid first lien, less liquid first lien, last outs, second outs, and all of those having potentially different advance rates. But that is all, you know, information to come over the next 6 to 9 months, I'd say, as we develop not only our strategy, but our leverage providers develop their strategies, because the ones we've talked to have not fully thought through it.
Okay. And then I guess on that, for your credit facilities and your term loan that you have, are there one-to-one debt limitations on those covenants, on those facilities at all?
No.
Okay. I guess, I mean, you know, as we think about this from just like a high level, I think I read that the blended yield, and you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, you know, the cost of your debt is around 4.85%. And then, you know, you add in base fees, you know, that's probably roughly in around another 4%, and then possibly a little bit more admin costs. And looking at kind of the yields, you know, that are available on the market today, and of course, you know, could be, you know, 12 months away from any sort of implementation. But, you know, it starts to sort of squeeze on the margin, and like you're saying, it really depends on the cost of debt and what's available when you start to do that. So it just, I don't know. I mean, the ROE starts to get squeezed out there. I mean, if you're targeting lower yielding, safer investments, which, you know, we do think is the right strategy, the math has to work out for sure.
Yeah, but I think, you know, an important part of that math that you've left out is mm-hmm. that if you are going to be lending on lower risk, lower return, you're not going to be paying LIBOR plus 350 to 400. You're going to be paying probably more like LIBOR plus 200 to 250. So the math is very, very different on the borrowing cost of a lower risk, lower return than our current portfolio.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, I appreciate you for correcting me on that. So, other than that, I mean, I guess just kind of looking at maybe the share repurchases, I just was curious if you guys had made any repurchases since you announced that back, or the board had chosen to do that a couple weeks ago.
No, they didn't choose a couple weeks ago. Last week was the board meeting, and so we are in the process of putting that all in place. I would expect that by the end of next week, everything will be done and in place to begin the buyback program. And
hello?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry about that. I got cut off. But, yeah, so those are all my questions. Thanks.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Did I come through or not on the answer to the buyback?
I think the last part was cut off, but I pretty much heard the bulk of it, which is
okay. So just to restate it, if anyone else got cut off, we are putting everything in place. You know, all the accounts, all the processes, et cetera, that should be completed over the next week or so. So by the end of next week, we expect it to be up and running. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, guys. That's all I have.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Robert Dodd from Raymond James. Please state your question.
Hi, guys. Several questions. Just going back to Paul's question about leverage and your comment, Mike, that, you know, if you can get, I guess, a lower risk type asset and perhaps more diversified, you could lower the cost, right? I mean, your marginal cost of borrowing is only effectively like L plus one because you've got a sizable non-use fee on the current facility, right? So do you think you could get that down as well if you changed the structure of the facility to better match, you know, potentially lower risk assets?
It is entirely possible, and that's why one of the first calls we made was to our current provider to talk about different ways of thinking about our current facility.
Okay, got it. Framework-wise, obviously, I mean, you know, do you have and I realize it's a year out before it can happen. There's a lot of discussion that can go on between now and then. But, you know, can you give any color about what you think your target leverage ratio could be? Obviously, you've got one right now, you know, call it, you know, 0.8. Where could, you know, do you think 1.5 is in the ballpark? I'll say it out loud. I hope it's not 1.8. Or is it lower than that, right?
Well, it's not 1.8. 1.5 could be in the ballpark. It could be 1.2. It really comes back to it also comes back, quite truthfully, Robert, I think what people are not talking enough about is what is the availability and what are the types of assets as well as financing that's out there, because those are two critical things. I think the one premise that a lot of people have around this is that it's going to be a more competitive market out there because there's going to be more leverage, and so it's going to drive yields tighter on the less risky and the more liquid. That might be true, because if you think about pure math, that should be the direction. The flip side of that is also true, that if everybody starts going to the highly liquid, lower risk, then the stuff we're doing today, for the same risk we've got, we should be able to get wider spreads and better pricing and better structure, and maybe we don't have to increase leverage as much to increase ROE because everybody else is going away from the stuff that we do very, very well today. So it really is going to be a market dependent, but the leverage is dependent upon the type of risk we're taking, but in any scenario, that should translate into better ROE for the shareholder.
Got it. I appreciate that clarification. On that front, right, you know, lower risk versus, you know, first lien, looking at G or GEE or however I'm exactly supposed to say it, L plus 13.75 for a first lien loan. Can you give us any color on that when you're talking about how competitive the market is, et cetera, when I look at, you know, across the rest of your first lien type assets, much lower spreads, obviously. That one really stands out. So why should we have confidence that that's got the same kind of first lien credit quality as the rest of your portfolio?
Yeah, hey, Robert, it's Chris.
Hey, Chris.
The borrowing The company right now is borrowing at like L plus 1075.
Okay.
And we were in reviewing the credit about a year and a half ago and really liked the credit. And, you know, the lender wanted to, you know, take their position down, and we are sharing in all the loan repayments and excess cash flow sweep, but we're last out, you know, principal-wise in a refinancing or a sale or something like that.
So to be clear, that L plus 1375, that's after the last out adjustment. That's not the coupon.
Yes,
yeah, okay. Gotcha.
And the other important thing is that this was not a market deal done today. It was a company that we actually have, you know, gotten to know through Stifel, through that channel that we've got fairly proprietary. There was an existing lender. We had followed this company, looked at it, had extensive discussions last year. And the other party, quite truthfully, was outsized in their loan and wanted to bring some down, and they preferred to do it in a first out position. And we said, fine. We've now watched this thing continue and how it has performed and done everything they've done the last year. And so we were in a position to, you know, move quickly and negotiate a one-off deal.
Got it. On Trident, just mechanics for the accounting purposes, right? The biggest piece of Trident, you know, the $20 million piece is marked at about 52. So is it fair to say right now you're accruing, the PIK or 50% of the PIK, or that's what you did in the quarter. And then is that right? And then next quarter, can you tell us what the mix of roughly of cash versus PIK is? Because obviously it'll move around the recognition rate that you take on the income.
So let me see if I'm answering the question, and if not, correct me. The accrual is going to be the cash portion of the interest, which is 50% of the total interest will be cash pay, and 50% of the total interest will be PIK. We will be non-accrual on the PIK portion. So what we get paid in cash, we will recognize. What we get paid in kind, we will not recognize and accrue.
And
about the total position, that's 50% of the interest. I think about it as a total position as opposed to tranche by tranche.
And so, so in this quarter that you just reported, you recognized 50% of the interest as well. It was just all PIK. Is that right?
Yeah. In this quarter, hold on one second. Yes, exactly.
Okay, got it.
Check to make sure before.
Yeah, thank you. Couple of other things in the top line. It looked to me like obviously dividend income. There was some PIK, same as last quarter. I presume that's related to Bird Electric, right? And so that should be ongoing.
Yes. That's converted to current because they have passed the milestone where they need to convert to cash. So that's no longer PIK.
You won't see
that. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. And then the other question, I mean, just when I look at the top line, I mean, obviously a really, really, really strong quarter. Looks to me that there was maybe 750, and you broke down, you know, obviously, you know, the realizations and things like that, but was there about 750,000, give or take, in, between some accelerated OID accretion and things like that, that kind of outsized in the quarter, and that's kind of the non-recurring piece that we wouldn't expect next quarter because obviously you had some large repays, et cetera. Is that kind of like the outsized number we're looking at, or is it a little smaller than that?
No, that's about right.
That's primarily related to Fleet Pride.
Yep, got it. Last one, if I can, on the energy front, obviously you're changing the and obviously oil right now is doing quite well, so that's sort of appreciating. If you increase the leverage, would you change the kind of the effective cap, right? Because, I mean, you know, if you go up, the energy, if it stays at 20% of the portfolio, just looking at the historic numbers, that becomes larger and larger relative to the equity base and the potential volatility given
yeah.
commodity exposure? Or would that change the industry limits that you have internally for allocation?
Yeah, I think you've got to think about it as the notional amount being around where it is. Might the notional amount be slightly different, but the percentage would come down significantly.
Right, okay.
Okay?
Got it. Yeah, got it. I appreciate that. Thank you. Okay, that's it, my questions. Thanks a lot.
And just for the record for everyone, you know, the energy we would expect to continue to trend down in the mid-teens, not be in the high teens between the two categories. And as we have, you know, I just note for everyone on the call, I know there were 2 years, it was a lot of ago, a lot of trepidation around this portfolio in energy. The first lien, second lien nature of our portfolio is very different than some other BDCs that had mostly either second lien or subordinated or mezz type exposure. And, you know, knock on wood, we still have exposure and we like our exposure, but the thesis has proven out in the way we've approached it.
Our next question comes from Tori Ward from Ayers Management. Please state your question.
Yeah, hey guys. Just real quick on your liability side of the balance sheet, as we think about, you know, a year from now going from, you know, 1-to-1 debt to equity to 2-to-1, can you just remind us what the maturity of your liability side and also whether or not there's any restrictions on the leverage rate, on the 2-to-1, 1-to-1 leverage built into those liabilities?
Hey, Tori, it's Rocco. So on the term loan, it is December of 2020 it matures, and on the revolver, it's December of 2019, and there are no restrictions. Mike had noted it before, there's no restrictions, the 1-to-1.
Great, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press *1 on your phone now. At this time, we have no further questions.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for the time. We're actually pretty excited about where the portfolio is and our pipeline going forward and, you know, the dividend levels that we've got and everything else. We think that it's a very good market. It's a competitive market, but given our size and our sourcing channels with both Stifel and Cyrus, we're pretty excited about the next 3 to 6 months. And I think that is kind of the window that I feel comfortable talking about in any market these days is 3 to 6 months. So thank you.
This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for attending.